he was born a slave in Bardstown, as you say, a very Catholic area in Kentucky. And as far as we know, the Jesuits who were there worked with him and helped him with his education. Rudd spoke fluent German and wrote German. So, I mean, he was obviously a very sharp young man, and maybe the Jesuits worked with him there. But also he moved to Springfield sometime before 1876. Now I'm talking about Springfield, Ohio.
Right.
And there he, I mean, he worked, finished his education there and worked at a hotel there and did some other odd jobs, a mechanic work, we think. But then he started working in the newspaper business. He worked with the Springfield Review. You know, and I think that anybody that was really interested in civil rights for African Americans, I mean, lots of folks anyway, they went into the publishing business and, you know, wrote and editorialized about the things that they were facing. In fact, there were more African American newspapers started, you know, from that period of history right after the end of Radical Reconstruction up to, you know, 1915 or so, when, you know, Jim Crow was really set in the South. There were more African American newspapers started during that period of time than any other period of publishing history.
Yeah, you write that more than 50% of all African-American-owned newspapers since 1827 were in that post-Reconstruction era from the late 1870s to about 12 or 15 years into the 20th century.
Yeah, really, I don't think there's a mystery for that. You know, when we think about, you know, we think about, you know, what was happening with regard to the rights of African-Americans during that period, you have to remember that, you know, they were losing rights that they had really gained after the Civil War, at the end of the Civil War, and during the early period of Reconstruction. And so, you know, as the separate coach laws were being passed, and of course, I think the first separate coach law was passed in Arkansas in 1891. And that's about the time that Rudd was really hitting his stride, talking about the rights of African Americans. And, you know, of course, more separate coach or Jim Crow laws, rather, were passed in Arkansas, say, in 1903. So also, I mean, if you look at just Arkansas history, from 1889 to 1918, there were 214 lynchings in the state, and about 85% of that, those lynchings were of African Americans.
He, as you mentioned, in Bairdstown, Kentucky, Jesuits raised there, we believed, educated early. He saw the Catholic Church as perhaps not just an agent, but the agent to solve racism in the United States.
Well, you're correct about that. During the period of the publication of the American Catholic Tribune, he very much trumpeted the merits of Catholicism for African Americans. And he really believed that the Catholic Church was the answer. There's a twofold reason for this. First of all, he believed when blacks were converted and came into the church, they would be treated as brothers, not second-class citizens. And secondly, he believed in something we call the Romantic Apologetic for Catholicism, which was really this idea that, you know, the Catholic Church would lead the way in civilizing secular society by teaching society the way they ought to behave toward African Americans outside the walls of the Catholic Church. So it's really sort of a twofold reason that he trumpeted the merits of Catholicism for blacks.
And you write that at least at one point, perhaps the American Catholic Tribune, it was an African American newspaper designed perhaps primarily for African American audiences, but at least at one point it perhaps had a larger readership among white Catholics than African Americans.
Yeah, you know, we're speculating here, but
right.
You know, he was selling an awful lot of subscriptions to whites as well as African Americans. And so he would visit parishes, and he would speak and sell subscriptions. And he spoke to a lot of, well, white Catholics. And so we think that, I mean, it had a dual readership, and maybe more whites than blacks. I think Joseph Lackner may have said that, may have written that there were more white readers than blacks.
How easy is it to try to define what the American Catholic Church attitude towards race in the 19th century was?
Well, it's certainly a mixed bag. You had some in the Catholic Church that were working really hard on behalf of African Americans, and yet they were infected with this sort of patronizing spirit. They believed that, you know, the African Americans were sort of part of a developing race, those kind of things. I think of John Slattery and the American Josephites. Well, you know, they were working to raise up black priests, but there was this strong feeling that, you know, it might take a while. They really couldn't get the academic piece to it. And, you know, could they really be celibate? Could African Americans be celibate? Were they capable of this? So there's this real patronizing spirit. But then also, you had Catholics that were, I mean, they were wonderful advocates on behalf of blacks, including John Ireland, Archbishop of St. Paul, Minnesota. And, you know, he really comes off looking good in the book because he did some amazing things on behalf of African Americans.
He delivers this, at the time, controversial sermon that, you know, read with the hindsight of history is, my goodness, what a progressive attitude he had at the time, where he was not just arguing, but saying there is no other choice. We have to all be equal. In fact, said there is no, as the terminology of the time said, Negro problem. That's not the problem. The problem is in the minds of people who insist on seeing that problem.
You know, it was a beautiful sermon. I think you're referring, I think it was May 5th, 1890, when Ireland spoke to a packed house at St. Augustine Parish in Washington, D.C. And I tell you, when I read that, it sent chills up my spine. And, I mean, he really was progressive. I think he said something like, in 50 years, we'll wonder why there ever was race prejudice. And so he said, I'll recognize no color line. And really, his sermon caused quite a stir. Even progressives in the Catholic Church thought he'd gone too far. And so, wasn't that great? I mean,
yeah.
It was a fantastic sermon. It was great reading.
Well, and some of the criticisms of that sermon that were offered in newspaper rebuttals were that he was calling for, this phrase, too much equality.
Right, and so that gets back to the idea of sort of it's a mixed bag.
Right.
Ed, you really did have bigoted Catholics in the church who really criticized and roundly criticized Ireland and others who were, you know, from Ireland's camp. And they said some pretty cruel things about African Americans. And so Red wasn't stupid and he wasn't naive. He knew that there was this element in the Catholic Church. But Red was an optimist, and Red really tried to say things like, well, if they're bigoted Catholics in the church, they didn't learn it, you know, from the leaders in the Catholic Church, and they didn't learn it from their teaching. He didn't implicate the Catholic Church. But he said these were sort of rogue elements that needed to straighten themselves out, really, if you want to say it that way.